Section 11. The Tyranny of Debt. Chapter 48. Living Within the Income. Many, very many, have not so educated themselves that they can keep their expenditures within the limit of their income. They do not learn to adapt themselves to circumstances, and they borrow and borrow again and again, and become overwhelmed in debt, and consequently they become discouraged and disheartened. Many do not remember the cause of God, and carelessly expend money in holiday amusements, in dress and folly. And when there is a call made for the advancement of the work in home and foreign missions, they have nothing to give, or even have overdrawn their account. Thus they rob God in tithes and offerings, and through their selfish indulgence they lay the soul open to fierce temptations and fall into the wiles of Satan. We should be on our guard and not allow ourselves to spend money upon that which is unnecessary and simply for display. We should not permit ourselves to indulge tastes that lead us to pattern after the customs of the world and rob the treasury of the Lord. Industry and economy in the family. I was shown that you, my brother and sister, have much to learn. You have not lived within your means. You have not learned to economize. If you earn high wages, you do not know how to make it go as far as possible. You consult taste or appetite instead of prudence. At times you expend money for a quality of food in which your brethren cannot afford to indulge. Dollars slip from your pocket very easily. It is as wrong for you to fail to use your strength to the best advantage as it is for a rich man to covetously retain his riches because it is agreeable to do so. You do not make the exertion that you should to support your family. You can and do work if work is conveniently prepared to hand, but you do not exert yourself to set yourself to work, feeling that it is a duty to use your time and strength to the very best advantage and in the fear of God. You have been in a business which would at times yield you large profits at once. After you have earned means, you have not studied to economize in reference to a time when means could not be earned so easily, but have expended much for imaginary wants. Had you and your wife understood it to be a duty that God enjoined upon you, to deny your taste and your desires, and make provision for the future, instead of living merely for the present, you could now have had a competency, and your family have had the comforts of life. You have a lesson to learn, which you should not be backward in learning. It is to make a little go the longest way. Jesus wrought a miracle and fed 5,000, and then he taught an important lesson of economy. Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Duties, important duties, rest upon you. Owe no man anything. Were you infirm, were you unable to labor, then your brethren would be in duty bound to help you. As it is, all you needed from your brethren when you changed your location was a start. If you felt as ambitious as you should, and you and your wife would agree to live within your means, you could be free from embarrassment. You will have to labor for small wages as well as for large. Industry and economy would have placed your family, ere this, in a much more favorable condition. Economy from principle. Those whose hands are open to respond to the calls for means to sustain the cause of God and to relieve the suffering and the needy are not the ones who are found loose and lax and dilatory in their business management. They are always careful to keep their outgoes within their income. They are economical from principle. They feel it their duty to save, that they may have something to give. The first lesson: self-denial. I have seen poor families struggling with debt, and yet the children were not trained to deny themselves in order to aid their parents. In one family where I visited, the daughters expressed a desire for an expensive piano. Gladly would the parents have gratified this wish, but they were embarrassed with debt. The daughters knew this, and had they been taught to practice self-denial, they would not have given their parents the pain of denying their wishes. But although they were told that it would be impossible to gratify their desires, the matter did not end there. The wish was expressed again and again, thus continually adding to the heavy burden of the parents. On another visit, I saw the coveted musical instrument in the house, and knew that some hundreds of dollars had been added to the burden of debt. I hardly know whom to blame most, the indulgent parents or the selfish children. Both are guilty before God. This one case will illustrate many. These young persons, although they profess to be Christians, have never taken the cross of Christ. For the very first lesson to be learned of Christ is the lesson of self-denial. Said our Savior, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." In no way can we become disciples of Christ, except by complying with this condition. Chapter 49. Bringing reproach upon God's cause. The religion you profess makes it as much your duty to employ your time during the 6 working days as to attend church on the Sabbath. You are not diligent in business. You let hours, days, and even weeks pass without accomplishing anything. The very best sermon you could preach to the world would be to show a decided reformation in your life and provide for your own family. Says the Apostle, "If any provide not for his own, and specially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." You bring a reproach upon the cause by locating in a place where you indulge indolence for a time, and then are obliged to run in debt for provision for your family. These, your honest debts, you are not always particular to pay, but, instead, move to another place. This is defrauding your neighbor. The world has a right to expect strict integrity in those who profess to be Bible Christians. By one man's indifference in regard to paying his just dues, all our people are in danger of being regarded as unreliable. "Whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." This refers to those who labor with their hands, as well as to those who have gifts to bestow. God has given you strength and skill, but you have not used them. Your strength is sufficient to abundantly support your family. Rise in the morning, even while the stars are shining, if need be. Lay your plans to do something, and then accomplish it. Redeem every pledge, unless sickness lays you prostrate. Better deny yourself food and sleep than be guilty of keeping from others their just dues. What the Eighth Commandment requires. The Eighth Commandment condemns man-stealing and slave-dealing, and forbids wars of conquest. It condemns theft and robbery. It demands strict integrity in the minutest details of the affairs of life. It forbids overreaching in trade, and requires the payment of just debts or wages. It declares that every attempt to advantage oneself by the ignorance, weakness, or misfortune of another is registered as fraud in the books of heaven. One of Satan's nets for souls. All must practice economy. No worker should manage his affairs in a way to incur debt. When one voluntarily becomes involved in debt, he is entangling himself in one of Satan's nets which he sets for souls. Weakens faith, tends to discouragement. Dear brother, I am sorry that you are situated as you are, under the pressure of debt. I know of quite a number who, like yourself, are troubled and distressed over their financial condition. The Lord does not take pleasure in your distress. He wants to bestow upon you the consolations of His Holy Spirit, that you may be a free man, abiding in His light and in His love. He has lessons for you to learn, and He would have you move quick in learning them. You ought not to allow yourself to become financially embarrassed, for the fact that you are in debt weakens your faith and tends to discourage you, and even the thought of it makes you nearly wild. You need to cut down your expenses and strive to supply this deficiency in your character. You can and should make determined efforts to bring under control your disposition to spend means beyond your income. A demoralizing practice. The practice of borrowing money to relieve some pressing necessity and making no calculation for canceling the indebtedness, however common, is demoralizing. The Lord would have all who believe the truth converted from these self-deceiving practices. They should choose rather to suffer want than to commit a dishonest act. No soul can resort to prevarication or dishonesty in handling the Lord's goods and stand guiltless before God. All who do this deny Christ in action, while they profess to keep and teach the commandments of God. They do not maintain the principles of God's law. If those who see the truth do not change in character, corresponding to the sanctifying influence of the truth, they will be a savor of death unto death. They will misrepresent the truth, bring a reproach upon it, and dishonor Christ, who is truth. Chapter 50. A Call to Prayer or Change of Occupation. Dear brother and sister, I feel tender sympathy for you, and I am praying that you may see matters in a correct light. You must see that one should not manage his affairs in a way that will incur debt. When a man sees that he is not successful, why does he not betake himself to prayer or change his work? There are stormy times before us, and the Lord will accept all who can cooperate with him. Practice self-denial and self-sacrifice. Consider every movement carefully and prayerfully. Walk softly before the Lord. We must preserve a devotedness to God and make straight paths for our feet, lest the lame be turned out of the way. Counsel to a coal porter. In your letter you complain of the yoke of debt, but there is no excuse for your being in debt. Your freedom in borrowing, with no reason to suppose that you will be in a position to repay it, is doing great injustice to others, robbing them of their little all, and bringing reproach upon the cause of God. If you realized what you were doing at the time of your action, you would stop. You would see the sinfulness of robbing men, believers or unbelievers, and bringing them into straight places in order to relieve your present necessities. This case of yours, Brother Blank, is not a small affair. In the course you have pursued, you will leave upon the track of other canvassers a blighting influence, difficult for you to efface. You will have closed the door to other persons who would canvass and do the work honestly, but who will be regarded as untrustworthy. To those who really need to have some indulgence and favors in the line of trust, because of the wrong course some canvassers have pursued, they dare not venture. And with the experience they have had, in the loss from the treasury of hundreds of pounds, why should they not be afraid to repose confidence in men who so manage as to draw from the treasury, and leave them minus the means they so greatly need to sustain the work of God for this time? Freedom through self-denial. Be determined never to incur another debt. Deny yourself 1,000 things rather than run in debt. This has been the curse of your life, getting into debt. Avoid it as you would the smallpox. Make a solemn covenant with God that by His blessing you will pay your debts and then owe no man anything if you live on porridge and bread. It is so easy in preparing your table to throw out of your pocket 25 cents for extras. Take care of the pennies, and the dollars will take care of themselves. It is the mites here and the mites there that are spent for this, that, and the other, that soon run up into dollars. Deny self at least while you are walled in with debts. Do not falter, be discouraged, or turn back. Deny your taste, deny the indulgence of appetite, save your pence and pay your debts. Work them off as fast as possible. When you can stand forth a free man again, owing no man anything, you will have achieved a great victory. Personal debt, not to hinder liberality. Some have not come up and united in the plan of systematic benevolence, excusing themselves because they were not free from debt. They plead that they must first owe no man anything. But the fact that they are in debt does not excuse them. I saw that they should render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. Some feel conscientious to owe no man anything, and think that God can require nothing of them until their debts are all paid. Here they deceive themselves. They fail to render to God the things that are His. Everyone must bring to the Lord a suitable offering. Those who are in debt should take the amount of their debts from what they possess and give a proportion of the remainder. Chapter 51. Lifting Debts on Church Buildings. I rejoice with you in the prospect of clearing the church buildings from debt. How much might have been saved if extra efforts had been made every year to do this? There is no necessity for our meeting houses to continue year after year in debt. If every member of the church will do his duty, practicing self-denial and self-sacrifice for the Lord Jesus, whose purchased possession he is, that his church may be free from debt, he will do honor to God. The Lord's great centers, his own instrumentalities, should be free from all debt. Every year, many pounds are being swallowed up by the interest paid on debts. If this money was all appropriated to settle the principal, the debt would not be eating, eating, and ever eating. It is a poor, wretched policy to go into debt. If the money that is needed to build could be first accumulated by strenuous efforts, and the church dedicated free from debt, how much better it would be. Oh, shall we not make it a rule when building a house for the Lord to put forth earnest, persevering efforts that it may be dedicated to Him free from debt? The Lord has shown me that debts need not be left on our meeting houses in Australia or New Zealand. A debt in every case means a neglect of God's special, sacred things, for selfish, common things are made first and all-absorbing. The very highest honor is to be shown to God's tabernacle. Every other consideration should be second to this. Our ideas must be elevated, ennobled, and sanctified. Worldliness and covetousness have been indulged by parents for their children and for relatives and friends. Money has been appropriated when and where it could not honor God, where it has done positive harm. Gifts have been liberally bestowed on children and relatives and friends, while the gifts that have been made to that which the Lord honors have been stinted and limited in value and in recurrence. Self-denial and the church mortgage. The test question for every Christian to ask himself is, have I, in my innermost soul, a love for Jesus? Do I love His tabernacle? Is my love for God and my Redeemer strong enough to lead me to deny self? When temptations come to indulge in pleasure and selfish enjoyment, shall I not say, no, I will not spend 1 shilling or even 6 pence for my own gratification while the house of God is under mortgage or bearing the pressure of debt? Should not Christ have our first and highest consideration? Should He not demand this token of our respect and loyalty? These very things underlie our heart life, in the home circle, and in the church life. If the heart, the soul, the strength, the life is surrendered wholly to God, if the affection is given wholly to Him, you will make God supreme in all your service. The result will be that you will have a sense of what it means to be a partner with Jesus Christ in the sacred firm. The building erected for the worship of God will not be left crippled with debt. It will appear almost like a denial of your faith to allow such a thing. Church debts. Dishonoring to God. It is dishonoring to God for our churches to be burdened with debt. This state of things need not exist. It shows wrong management from beginning to end, and it is a dishonor to the God of heaven. Read and study prayerfully the 4th chapter of Zechariah. Then read the 1st chapter of Haggai and see if this representation does not apply to you. While you have thought much of your own selves, of your own selfish interests, you have either neglected to arise and build or have built on hired money and have not made donations to free the church buildings from debt. Will you consider what it is your duty to do? Year after year passes by, and very little sacrifice is made to lessen the debt. The interest swallows up the means that should be used to pay off the principal. Why the debts remain. Slothful servants is the charge that God makes of those in the churches. His will is not done when sacred things are left to remain in a withered, neglected condition. Self-sacrifice, self-denial in every church would change the order of things. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. When that gold and silver is used for selfish purposes, to gratify ambition or pride or selfish indulgence, as has been done, God is dishonored. Can those who are representative men be so sound asleep that they do not comprehend that the state of things that exists is a result of neglect on their part? When the people chosen by God embellish their own houses and invest God's money in various things for selfish gratification, knowing that the very means thus used should be used to keep the house of God in the very best condition, that no means may be taken from the treasury to defray running expenses, they cannot be blessed. I have a message from the Lord. The churches must awaken from their torpor and think of these things. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. Are we as families appropriating the Lord's silver and gold to selfish purposes and doing nothing to lighten the debt on His house? The churches are burdened with debt, not because it is impossible for them to be freed, but because of selfish indulgence on the part of the members. By this neglect, God is dishonored, and if He binds about your resources, be not blind as to the cause. When you place the Lord first and realize that the Lord's house is dishonored by debt, God will bless you. Need for counsel and cooperation. Dear brother, you will need in every move you make to know that you are moving in that way that you will not follow your own judgment, but the united advice of your brethren. You have failed in this work, working too much independently. You can borrow money, but have you taken your brethren right along with you in your building plans? Have you yoked up with them, and they with you? One man's mind and judgment is not to be allowed to become an efficiency in any case where the building of a church is concerned. It takes every member of the church who can carry responsibilities, and the minister is not the man to lift this work alone. This is a lesson you must learn, to seek the mind and judgment of your brethren, and not advance without their advice, counsel, and cooperation. An inexcusable laxness. The lax way which many churches have of incurring debts and keeping in debt was presented before me. In some cases, a continual debt is upon the house of God, and continual interest to be paid. These things should not and need not be. If there is that wisdom and tact and zeal manifested for the Master that God requires of every one of His servants, there will be a change in these things. The debts will be lifted. Self-denial and self-sacrifice will work wonders in advancing the spirituality of the church. Let every church member do something. Let the necessity of each acting a part be most strenuously impressed upon the worshipers. The blank college and church need not be loaded with debt as it is. This shows unwise stewardship. God calls for self-sacrifice. He calls for offerings from those who can give, and even the poorer members can do their little. And when there is a will to do, God will open the way. But the Lord is not pleased with the management. He does not design that His cause shall be trammeled with debt. Self-denial will enable those who have done nothing in the past to do something tangible and show that they believe the teachings of the Word, that they believe the truth for this time. All, both old and young, parents and children, are to show their faith by their works. Faith is made perfect by works. We are in the very closing scenes of this earth's history, yet there are but few who realize this, because the world has come in between God and the soul. Building the church and school at Avondale. There are times when much is to be gained by a united, prompt, and persistent effort. The time for opening our school had been appointed, but our brethren throughout the colonies were looking for a postponement. They had waited long for the school to open and were discouraged. There was much work yet to be done on the buildings, and our funds were exhausted. Therefore, the builders said that the work could not be done at the appointed time. But we said there must be no delay. The school must be opened at the time named. So we laid the matter before the church and called for volunteers. 30 men and women offered themselves for the work, and although it was hard for them to spare the time, a strong company continued at the work day after day till the buildings were completed, cleaned, and furnished, ready to be used at the day set for opening the school. When the time came for this meeting house to be built, there was another test of faith and loyalty. We had a council to consider what should be done. The way seemed hedged about with difficulties. Some said, "Enclose a small building, and when money shall come in, enlarge, for we cannot possibly complete at this time such a house as we desire." Others said, "Wait till we have money with which to build a commodious house." This we thought to do. But the word of the Lord came to me in the night season, "Arise and build without delay." We then decided that we would take hold of the work and walk out by faith to make a beginning. The very next night there came from South Africa a draft for £200. This was a gift from Brother and Sister Lindsay of Cape Town to help us in building the meeting house. Our faith had been tested. We had decided to begin the work, and now the Lord put into our hands this large gift with which to begin. With this encouragement, the work was begun in earnest. The school board gave the land and £100. £200 was received from the Union Conference, and the members of the church gave what they could. Friends outside of the church helped, and the builders gave a part of their time, which was as good as money. Thus the work was completed, and we have this beautiful house, capable of seating 400 people. We thank the Lord for this house in which to worship Him. He understands all the strait places through which we were brought. When difficulties arose, Elder Haskell, who was superintending the work, would call the workmen together, and they would pray earnestly for God's blessing upon themselves and the work. The Lord heard prayer, and the house was completed in 7 weeks. Chapter 52. Avoiding Institutional Debts. God does not want His work to be continually embarrassed with debt. When it seems desirable to add to the buildings or other facilities of an institution, beware of going beyond your means. Better to defer the improvements until Providence shall open the way for them to be made without contracting heavy debts and having to pay interest. The publishing houses have been made places of deposit by our people, and have thus been enabled to furnish means to support branches of the work in different fields, and have aided in carrying other enterprises. This is well. None too much has been done in these lines. The Lord sees it all. But, from the light He has given me, every effort should be made to stand free from debt. In the publishing house. The publishing work was founded in self-denial and should be conducted upon strictly economical principles. The question of finance can be managed if, when there is a pressure for means, the workers will consent to a reduction in wages. This was the principle the Lord revealed to me to be brought into our institutions. When money is scarce, we should be willing to restrict our wants. Let the proper estimate be placed upon the publications, and then let all in our publishing houses study to economize in every possible way, even though considerable inconvenience is thus caused. Watch the little outgoes. Stop every leak. It is the little losses that tell heavily in the end. Gather up the fragments. Let nothing be lost. Waste not the minutes in talking. Wasted minutes mar the hours. Persevering diligence, working in faith, will always be crowned with success. Some think it beneath their dignity to look after small things. They think it the evidence of a narrow mind and a niggardly spirit. But small leaks have sunk many a ship. Nothing that would serve the purpose of any should be allowed to waste. A lack of economy will surely bring debt upon our institutions. Although much money may be received, it will be lost in the little wastes of every branch of the work. Economy is not stinginess. Every man or woman employed in the publishing house should be a faithful sentinel, watching that nothing be wasted. All should guard against supposed wants that require an expenditure of means. Some men live better on $400 a year than others do on $800. Just so it is with our institutions. Some persons can manage them with far less capital than others can. God desires all the workers to practice economy, and especially to be faithful accountants. Saving expense through careful sanitarium management. Those connected with our institutions need to study how to save expense so that the institutions shall not become involved in debt. Wisdom must be shown in the matter of purchasing. Money must be made to go as far as possible. By careful management, many dollars may be saved. Expenditures should not be made unless they are warranted by the means in hand. There are those connected with our institutions who incur debts that might be avoided. Perhaps unnecessary expense is entailed to beautify the building. Money is often used to gratify taste and inclination. Every worker to be a producer. Let everyone now strive with courage and activity to save rather than to spend. Say to those who are willing to consume without producing, "It is my duty to economize in every line. I cannot encourage extravagance. I cannot let means go out of my hands to purchase that which is not needed." From the highest to the lowest, God's workmen are to study to economize. Let each one say to himself, "I am to restrain in myself any inclination to spend means unnecessarily." Let those who work in God's service be producers as well as consumers. Look at the greatness of the work, and restrain the unchristian inclination to spend money for self-gratification. Count the cost of the thing you desire to buy. This is an excellent opportunity for everyone to stand in his lot and in his place. Let each one try to produce something. Those in God's work should be willing to help wherever help is needed. They should make their expenditures as few as possible, for necessities will arise where every dollar will be needed to carry forward the Lord's work. The employment of helpers, for indoor and outdoor work, is a matter that needs careful consideration. The managers of our institutions are to be careful and prudent. They should not engage large numbers of helpers unless it is a positive necessity. In this matter, mistakes are often made. Employees a part of the firm. The helpers in our institutions should act as though they were a part of the firm. They should not think that they must work only for a certain number of hours each day. When emergencies arise and extra help is needed, they should respond willingly and cheerfully. They should feel an intense interest in the success of the institution for which they are working. Thus, others are encouraged to work interestedly and conscientiously. Christ said, "Gather up the fragments, that nothing be lost." Let those who act any part in our institutions heed this instruction. Let them take care that there is no waste in the spiritual and temporal supplies which the Lord provides. Economy is to be learned by the educators and taught to the helpers. And by precept and example, parents should teach their children the science of making a small amount go as far as possible. Many poor families are poor because they spend their money as soon as they receive it. The one who occupies the position of cook in a sanitarium should be trained to habits of economy. He should realize that no food is to be wasted. Not slothful in business. The word of inspiration tells us that we are to be not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Let all who are connected with our sanitariums take hold of their work interestedly and earnestly. If helpers have not learned the science of being quick, let them begin at once to train themselves in this line, or else consent that their wages shall be proportionate to the amount of work done. Every day, nurses and helpers should become more efficient, more all-round, and helpful. They can individually help themselves to reach a higher and still higher standard as the Lord's helping hand. Let those who are naturally slow train themselves day by day to do their work more quickly and at the same time carefully. Those who receive pay for their labor should put in good time. They should be producers as well as consumers. As they obtain an education in these lines, they will become more and more able to do perfectly the work assigned to them. They will be ready to take hold of the work in any place. Economy in school management. Economy must be practiced in every line to keep afloat and not be drowned with debts. But there is to be an increase in the sum paid for tuition. This was presented to me while in Europe and has been presented since to you and our schools. And the problem, how shall our schools keep out of debt, will always remain a problem until there are wiser calculations. Charge higher rates for students' educational advantages, and then let persons have the management in cooking who know how to save and economize. Let the best talent be secured, even if good, reasonable wages have to be paid. The binding about the edges is essential. When these precautions are attended to, you will not have increasing debts in your schools. The students to cooperate. Some will say, "We shall have fewer students." This may be, but those that you do have will appreciate their time and see the necessity of diligent work to qualify them for the positions they must fill. If the Lord is kept ever before the students as the one to whom they should look for counsel, like Daniel, they will receive of him knowledge and wisdom. All will then become channels of light. Lay the matter before the students themselves. Inquire who of them will practice self-denial and make sacrifice to cancel the debt already incurred. With some students, only the willing mind is needed. God help the managers of our schools never to allow the outgo to exceed the income if the school has to be closed. There has not been the talent that is needed in the management of our schools financially. These things God will require of the managers. Every needless, expensive habit is to be laid aside, every unnecessary indulgence cut away. When the principles so manifestly indicated by the Word of God to all schools are taken hold of as earnestly as they should be, the debts will not accumulate. Guarding school finance. Especially should the president of a school look carefully after the finances of the institution. He should understand the underlying principles of bookkeeping. He is faithfully to report the use of all monies passing through his hands for the use of the school. The funds of the school are not to be overdrawn, but every effort is to be made to increase the usefulness of the school. Those entrusted with the financial management of our educational institutions must allow no carelessness in the expenditure of means. Everything connected with the finances of our schools should be perfectly straight. The Lord's way must be strictly followed, though this may not be in harmony with the ways of man.
If you are tempted to appropriate the money coming into the school in ways that bring no special benefit to the school, your standard of principle needs to be carefully criticized, that the time may not come when you will have to be criticized and found wanting. Who is your bookkeeper? Who is your treasurer? Who is your business manager? Are they careful and competent? Look to this. It is possible for money to be misappropriated without anyone's understanding clearly how it came about. And it is possible for a school to be losing continually because of unwise expenditures. Those in charge may feel this loss keenly, and yet suppose they have done their best. But why do they permit debts to accumulate? Let those in charge of a school find out each month the true financial standing of the school. Shun debt as leprosy. Economy should be exercised in everything connected with the school. Those who come to the school generally leave homes that are unadorned, where they have been accustomed to eat simple food without a number of courses. They are accustomed to plain, hearty food at noon. It would be better for all to have only a simple evening meal. There must be a strict regard to economy, or a heavy debt will be incurred. Keep within bounds. Shun the incurring of debt as you would shun leprosy. Chapter 53. Failing to count the cost. There are men who do not move wisely. They are anxious to make a large appearance. They think that outward display will give them influence. In their work, they do not first sit down and count the cost to see whether they are able to finish what they have begun. Thus, they show their weakness. They show that they have much to learn in regard to the necessity of moving carefully and guardedly. In their self-confidence, they make many mistakes. Thus, some have received harm from which they will never recover. This has been the case with several who have felt competent to establish and conduct sanitariums. Failure comes to them, and when they find themselves involved in debt, they ask the Medical Missionary Association to take over the unsuccessful institution and to assume its liabilities. It does harm to the Medical Missionary Association to take over so many bankrupt sanitariums. Let those who have conducted these sanitariums and who have walked in false paths begin to think sensibly. Let not failure be written upon them. This spoils the courage of good men. Men who might have done well if they had consecrated themselves to God, if they had been willing to work in a humble way, enlarging their business slowly, and refusing to go into debt, have made a failure because they have not worked on right lines. And after getting into difficulty, they have sold out as men incompetent to manage. They desired relief from financial pressure and did not stop to think of the after results. Those who help such ones out of difficulty are tempted to bind them with such strong cords in the shape of pledges that ever after they feel that they are bond slaves. They seldom outgrow the reputation of poor management and failure. To those who thus become involved in debt, I am instructed to say, do not give up if you are moving in right lines. Work with all your power to relieve the situation yourselves. Do not throw an embarrassed institution upon an association that is already heavily burdened with debt. It is best for every sanitarium to stand in its own responsibility. Those who have charge of our sanitariums should move guardedly. There are times when they will see little increase. Let them act with wisdom and tact and adaptability. Let them study and practice the instruction Christ gave in regard to building a tower. Forethought is of far more value than afterthought, when a neglect of wise calculation and careful management is plainly seen to result in failure. Managers who are slack, who do not know how to manage, should be separated from the work. Secure the services of men and women who know how to bind about the edges, so that the work shall not ravel out. Let all who are connected with our institutions humble themselves before God. Let them ask God to help them to plan so wisely and economically that the institutions will take firm root and will bear fruit to God's glory. Depend not on men. Look to Jesus. Continue instant in prayer and watch unto prayer with thanksgiving. Be sure that you have a close connection with Christ. Debt through overbuilding. Brother Blank, it is not wisdom to become involved in debt. You are a wise man and do not need this reminder. A debt is a yoke, a binding, galling yoke. It would not be wisdom to purchase another place near Blank. You have been pressed almost beyond measure in the effort to build and equip the Blank Sanitarium. It would have been wiser to make the building smaller. I have always thought that it would be best to cut down the building plans still more than they were cut down. And then, when means came in, and if more room was needed, the building could have been enlarged. It would cost much less to furnish a smaller building. Entrapped through miscalculation. If we walk in the counsel of the Lord, we shall have opportunity to purchase for sanitarium purposes, at a reasonable rate, properties on which there already are buildings that can be utilized, and where the grounds are already ornamented by ornamental trees. Many such places have been presented to me. I have been instructed that the liberal offers made on these places should be carefully considered. It may sometimes be necessary, however, to select a site on which no improvements have been made and no buildings erected. In such a case, we must be careful not to select a place which will of necessity require a large outlay of means for improvements. Through lack of experience and miscalculation, we may be entrapped into the incurring of large debts because the buildings and improvements cost 2 or 3 times as much as was estimated. Counting on money only in prospect. The president and the business manager are to work unitedly together. The business manager is to see that the expenditure does not exceed the income. He is to know what there is to depend on, so that the work here shall not be burdened with debt, as it is in Battle Creek. The condition of things there need never have existed. It is the result of men not being under God's rule. When men are under God's rule, the work moves harmoniously. But when men of strong temperament, who are not controlled by God, are placed in responsible positions in the work, the cause is imperiled, for their strong temperaments lead them to use money which is only in prospect. Premature enterprises without wide counsel. Special talent is required to start a sanitarium and place it in running order, even though the enterprise be a private one. Before starting out in such an enterprise, our brethren should ask the advice of wise counselors. Blank must be worked, but it must be worked in the right way. Were enterprises started that would prove a disappointment, were the one who had taken the responsibility of the work upon himself to fail in his enterprise, it would be very difficult to overcome the impression thus made against the truth. Whoever has in view the starting of a sanitarium should consult those of his brethren who carry the burden of the work in fields nigh and afar off. We cannot afford to have any impression made by our medical work in the cities other than that God is our leader and our defense. To our brethren everywhere I am instructed to say, let the enterprises already started in needy fields be considered before new enterprises are begun, else a large burden of debt will be brought upon our people. Chapter 54. Moving Forward in Faith. To make no move that calls for the investment of means, unless we have the money in hand to complete the contemplated work, should not always be considered the wisest plan. In the upbuilding of his work, the Lord does not always make everything plain before his servants. He sometimes tries the confidence of his people by having them move forward in faith. Often he brings them into strait and trying places, bidding them go forward when their feet seem to be touching the waters of the Red Sea. It is at such times, when the prayers of his servants ascend to him in earnest faith, that he opens the way before them and brings them out into a large place. The Lord wants his people in these days to believe that he will do as great things for them as he did for the children of Israel in their journey from Egypt to Canaan. We are to have an educated faith that will not hesitate to follow his instructions in the most difficult experiences. Go forward is the command of God to his people. Faith and cheerful obedience are needed to bring the Lord's designs to pass. When he points out the necessity of establishing the work in places where it will have influence, the people are to walk and work by faith. By their godly conversation, their humility, their prayers and earnest efforts, they should strive to bring the people to appreciate the good work that the Lord has established among them. It was the Lord's purpose that the Loma Linda Sanitarium should become the property of our people, and He brought it about at a time when the rivers of difficulty were full and overflowing their banks. The working of private interests for the gaining of personal ends is one thing. In this, men may follow their own judgment, but the carrying forward of the Lord's work in the earth is entirely another matter. When He designates that a certain property should be secured for the advancement of His cause and the building up of His work, whether it be for sanitarium or school work or for any other branch, He will make the doing of that work possible, if those who have experience will show their faith and trust in His purposes, and will move forward promptly to secure the advantages He points out. While we are not to seek to wrest property from any man, yet, when advantages are offered, we should be wide awake to see the advantage, that we may make plans for the upbuilding of the work. And when we have done this, we should exert every energy to secure the free will offerings of God's people for the support of these new plants. Danger in extreme position. It is right to borrow money to carry forward a work that we know God desires to have accomplished. We should not wait in inconvenience and make the work much harder because we do not wish to borrow money. Mistakes have been made in incurring debt to do that which could well have waited till a future time. But there is danger of going to the other extreme. We are not to place ourselves in a position that will endanger health and make our work wearing. We are to act sensibly. We must do the work that needs to be done, even if we have to borrow money and pay interest. Guard against mistakes on both sides. The question now before us is, shall we try to secure the places that seem desirable in price and location when we cannot tell where our money is coming from? Brethren, blank, blank, and others are opposed to the increasing of debts. But I am not prepared to say that we should not, under any circumstances, purchase land to which the Lord seems to have directed our minds, when there is no hindrance but the question of ready money, and which property, in the providence of God, we could soon pay for. We have to guard against mistakes on both sides. A break on wheels of progress. The idea that a sanitarium should not be established unless it could be started free from debt has put the brake upon the wheels of progress. In building meeting houses, we have had to borrow money in order that something might be done at once. We have been obliged to do this in order to fulfill the directions of God. Persons deeply interested in the progress of the work have borrowed money and paid interest on it to help establish schools and sanitariums and to build meeting houses. The institutions thus established and the churches built have been the means of winning many to the truth. Thus the tithe has been increased, and workers have been added to the Lord's forces. Loss through lack of faith. God would have the standard lifted higher and still higher. The church cannot abridge her task without denying her master. Meeting houses must be built in many places. Is it economy to fail to provide in our cities places of worship where the Redeemer may meet with His people? Let us not give the impression that we find it too great an expense to provide properly for the reception of the heavenly guest. In laying plans for building, we need the wisdom of God. We should not needlessly incur debt, but I would say that in every case, all the money required to complete a building need not be in hand before the work is begun. We must often move forward by faith, working as expeditiously as possible. It is through a lack of faith that we fail of receiving the fulfillment of God's promises. We must work and pray and believe. We are to move forward steadily and earnestly, trusting in the Lord and saying, "We will not fail nor become discouraged." Chapter 55. Words from a Divine Counselor. In a vision of the night a short time ago, I was in council meetings. At these meetings, words were spoken that savored of the human more than of the divine. The medical work in blank was under consideration. Plans were proposed which, unless modified, would bind about the work and fail of relieving the situation. The General Conference was asked to pledge itself to raise a sum of no less than $20,000, or to become responsible for that amount, to establish a sanitarium in blank. Because Elder Blank refused to consent to place this additional obligation upon the General Conference, he was severely reflected upon by some. But, under the existing circumstances, he felt that he was forbidden by the Lord to lay this burden upon the conference. I honor Elder Blank's judgment on this question. But to return to the council meeting. Once more, the one who has long been our counselor was present to give us the word of the Lord. He said, "The Lord would not be glorified by your placing a yoke of debt upon the General Conference. In a special manner, he has wrought to break from the necks of his people the binding yokes of debt which they have worn so long. The conference must not again tread the same path that they have trodden. Some have not yet learned the lesson that Christ taught in regard to building a tower. Which of you," he inquired, "intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" This warning has been disregarded. When men in positions of responsibility are in such a hurry to establish some new institution that is untimely, the showing made is not only against the interests of the Lord's cause, but against the interests of the men who in human wisdom have tried to advance too rapidly. God is not glorified by those who attempt to go faster than He leads. Perplexity, embarrassment, and distress are the result. The Lord does not desire His representatives to repeat these mistakes, for the past record of such movements does not glorify Him. Let not mistakes of the past be repeated. A kind of frenzy has taken hold of the minds of some, leading them to do that which would absorb means without any prospect of afterward producing means. Had this money been used in the way the Lord signified it should be, workers would have been raised up and prepared to do the work that must be done before the coming of the Lord. The misappropriation of means shows the need of the Lord's warning that His work must not be bound about by human projects, that it must be done in a way that will strengthen His cause. By working on wrong plans, men have brought debts upon the cause. Let not this be repeated. Let those at the head of the work move cautiously, refusing to bury the cause of God in debt. Let no one move recklessly, heedlessly, thinking, without knowing, that all will be well. Lift the debts. God designs that we shall learn lessons from the failures of the past. It is not pleasing to Him to have debts rest upon His institutions. We have reached the time when we must give character to the work by refusing to erect large and costly buildings. We are not to copy the mistakes of the past and become more and more involved in debt. We are rather to endeavor to clear off the indebtedness that still remains on our institutions. Our churches can help in this matter if they will. Those members to whom the Lord has given means can invest their money in the cause without interest or at a low rate of interest, and by their free will offerings they can help to support the work. The Lord asks you to return cheerfully to Him a portion of the goods He has lent you, and thus become His almoners. In time of reformation, means will come. When there is a seeking of the Lord and a confession of sin, when the needed reformation takes place, united zeal and earnestness will be shown in restoring what has been withheld. The Lord will manifest His pardoning love, and means will come to cancel the debts on our institutions. For further study, School Management and Finance, Testimonies for the Church, 6, 206-218. Debt on the Danish Sanitarium, Testimonies for the Church, 6, 463-467. Relief of the Schools, Testimonies for the Church, 6, 468-478. Consideration in Buildings, Testimonies for the Church, 7, 90-94. Advantages of a Humble Beginning, Testimonies for the Church, 1, 558-559. Relief Plan for Liquidating Institutional Debts, Testimonies for the Church, 9, 71, 75, 79, 80, 88. Fundamentals of Christian Education, 520
to 524. Shun as disease, Testimonies for the Church 6:211. Shun as leprosy, Testimonies for the Church 6:217. Guard against as with barbed wire fence, Testimonies for the Church 7:236. A blot of debt, a dark shadow, Testimonies for the Church 6:217-216. Promptness in paying dues for missionary literature, Testimonies for the Church 2:628. Lifting church debts, Testimonies for the Church 6:103.